This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. District Council 37 is the city's largest union of city workers. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME, with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We're on Sunday evenings at 8 p.m., and then we rebroadcast again on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. This show features two members. I love these shows. I love shows where we're talking to members who have very interesting lives, both in the work that they do on the job and the lives they live outside of the job. And one of those people is in the studio with me now. Her name is Anita Samuels, Anita M. Samuels. And she is the author of a book called Rants and Retorts, How Bigots Got a Monopoly on Commenting About News Online. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Anita, you are a member of Local 375 and an employee of the City University of New York working at BMCC as a facilities coordinator for administration and planning. That's a long title. It's a job yes. I'm sure you do very well and have been doing it for some time.
I have.
But outside of that job, you have written what sounds like an amazingly provocative book. And this idea, and you're literally writing about the comments that appear in the comments section
yes.
of newspapers across the country. And what got you doing, what made this happen? What made this book?
Well, it was really simple. You know, in the journalism industry, we tend to be a little bit slow on following up on technology. I didn't really know what comments were at the time. And one day, I just said, oh, for entertainment purposes, I'll just read, you know, the comments at the end of this story. And when I did, I was completely shocked because I was like, well, it seemed like every time the subject of the story identified the person being written about as either directly or indirectly African American, I found that the comments were so racist, and I couldn't understand why this was okay to do now, where you wouldn't walk up to someone and talk to someone like that, but it was okay for you to post it online. So it upset me. And
I haven't done justice to the fact that we haven't talked about the fact that you have a journalism career. So it is not, I talked about your work at CUNY, but never mentioned the fact that you have had and been a journalist and
yes.
are a journalist.
Yes.
So I apologize for that. Let's continue the conversation.
That's okay. That's okay. So I started reading more of these stories, more of these comments, and I started complaining to the newspapers, you know, why is this on here? Why is this okay? And sometimes they take it off. But I felt like, you know, 100 other people or more probably read this already, even though you took it off and maybe they shared it or whatever. So that means that it's still out there.
Well, let me ask a question. Those comments stay there, and there are some gatekeepers at different publications?
Oh, you mean comment moderators.
Comment moderators, yes.
In the early days,
yes.
based on what I read, it seemed like they weren't,
right.
but there probably were. They probably had software filters to catch certain words, but, you know, people would spell the N-word differently with letters and numbers, and it would pass through the filters. And I think a lot of what happened in terms of like the worst stuff that appeared online happened like in the overnight hours. Now, as you may know already, the newspaper industry had changed and there'd been some issues over the years. It's been in decline because of the competition with the internet, you know, the World Wide Web at that time. And so the idea was to have comments to push people to go to the websites to read the content from the news organizations, and so they allow comments.
Now, you're saying, though, that what you noticed was if the subject of the story was African-American, there were going to be comments, an ugly comments, having nothing necessarily to do with the story or the content of the story, just about slurs on their African-Americanness.
That's right.
And
every stereotype you can imagine. You know, it was off topic. It had nothing to do with what happened. And even if the topic of the story had committed a crime or whatever, you know, people of other races do the same thing. So and then we'd be singled out, put it that way.
And the fact that it was being done, well, the fact that there is racism in this country is a fact. The fact that it was being done in this very sort of, I don't want to say passive way, because the language is not passive, but in the protection of their, you know, sitting in their house, while they would never confront you and say, blah, 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 they felt very comfortable typing out ugly words and putting it out there. And are you suggesting that there is a, when you say talking about this monopoly, are you suggesting that this is a coordinated effort in any way, shape, or form?
No, not coordinated. The people who write these comments are able to hide behind false screen names. That was the biggest backlash that a lot of news organizations received behind this, because it seemed like they were sanctioning it when, in fact, the terms of agreement that you... you may check off a box when you register to log into these websites, but they basically say that your content is your own and that the publication is not responsible for what you write. So, but that's not what was happening when people would say, oh, you know, you're allowing so many people to be anonymous and there's no retribution behind it because they can say whatever they want. You allow it to be posted. And, you know, everybody can read this.
For years, there's been a letters to the editor page of every newspaper. And sometimes those letters were vetted. In the New York Times, you certainly couldn't. You had to be a certain expert on the topic that you were writing, or they wanted it from the This broke all that rules and just kept... It just opened up the floodgates of anonymous bigotry.
That's right. That's right.
Have they gotten smarter about this?
I would say that from the time I started collecting comments, which was in 2008 to about 2015, I would say definitely, because the outpouring of anger behind the not only racism, but the sexism, xenophobia, and homophobia, all these things were rampant in online comments. My book is just a small part of what is a much bigger problem. But at least news organizations did take the time out to start addressing the problem. But they found that it was difficult to do, trying to hire people to sit there and moderate comments. And what was happening is a lot of editors ended up doing double duty trying to moderate these comments in addition to their other jobs, which was equally hard to do.
So what is it that, so how have these floodgates been controlled? Or are we saying that there has been some improvement in the way since 2008 to 2017, has the world gotten more civil in the online comment section?
No, Chris.
No, okay.
No.
No, somehow I didn't think so. Go ahead, though. I mean, okay. So what is...
It has gotten better in terms of, you know, they will delete comments. They will remove comments. The New York Times is probably one of the better ones. They're putting a lot of money and effort behind having their comments moderated. Some organizations are going to comment moderation organizations, like this one called eModeration, where you can hire... them to moderate, you know, your website or whatever needs to be moderated.
Well, I mean, I guess my question is, we've always known that there are ugly folks out there with ugly ideas. I would suggest, and you can tell me if I'm right, that the election of the first African-American president of the United States triggered a great deal of anger.
Yes.
And this idea that it's not about the color of Obama's skin. Of course it was about the color of Obama's skin. And you've been in the comments section knowing this, and you're here to report that, yes, it was racism.
Yes, that's what Chapter 2 is about.
Okay.
In fact, that's how the whole premise of the book started, just because of what I saw about President Obama. And I was like, wow, this man has done everything he's supposed to do. He made it to the top. I mean, he's spectacular. And yet, they're still calling him a boy. They're still calling him, a coon and all these things. And I'm like, okay, what decade are we in?
You know? So you were surprised?
I'll say surprised, and I know to some people that might sound naive. Of course, I'm familiar with racism. When I was born in 1966, I didn't deal so much with the civil rights movement. However, experiencing racism online in this way was devastating to me, and I definitely took offense to it.
And what was the impact? And what has been the impact on the African-American community to see that in the 21st century?
Disappointment, anger. For me, it was depression to some degree. I basically immersed myself in online comments for several years. And I tell you, I don't think I'll ever be right again.
At what point did you want to stop?
I did stop in 2013. I almost didn't continue because I had been so depressed. And, you know, this type of thing is going to affect people differently. This is how it affected me. Because as a journalist, my whole passion for writing came in writing more positive stories about African Americans.
So as the front is saying, you know, there are all these accomplishments, there is this sort of underworld that's
right.
in the comments
that's
section.
That's right. It doesn't matter.
That's undermining that.
That's right. It doesn't matter how high you get, in your career or in your life. As far as some people are concerned, we're still less than because of the color of our skin.
And the name of the book is Rants and Retorts, How Bigots Got a Monopoly on Commenting About News Online. We're talking with Anita Samuels, who is a member of Local 375 and an employee at the CUNY at BMCC. How hard was it to write this book?
Well, I mean, after sifting through the probably thousands of comments that I read, I had to figure out how I was going to put it all together. And I decided to go by chapter because I figured that a lot of these comments hit home where we live. So, okay, I'd start with the president. I'd start with how comments came about and talking about the freedom of speech issues, because you know that's a big thing. And the confusion among a lot of people is that they think freedom of speech is what they've been doing, but it really applies to government. We're talking about freedom of expression. But at what cost to humanity will it be if we continue to keep allowing this?
We've just got a little bit of time left. How does one get the book?
You can buy the book through my website, AnitaMSamuels.com. You can go on Amazon.com. You can go on BNN.com, as in Barnes & Noble. And there are many independent booksellers like Greenlight that also sell the book.
It is, like I say, it is always great when we get to do a show about members and the interesting lives that they live and the work that they're doing. Rants and Retorts is the book, How Bigots Got a Monopoly on Commenting About News Online. The author is Anita M. Samuels, and we're proud that she is a Local 375 member. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you will be back.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Thank you.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Oh, oh.
That was not Marvin Gaye singing What's Going On. That was a performer named C.P. Lacey, and that was part of a show recently. That was the Black History Month finale at DC 37 called The Motown Story, written by Yolanda Brooks Ruiz, who is a member of Local 768. Her title is Associate Public Health Sanitarian. Welcome back to the show, Yolanda.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
This was a... everyone in the building was talking about this show. You sold out. It was... It was quite a hit, quite a great way to end the Black History Month celebration. You are wrote the finale for last year's Black History Month celebration, which was Mandela, which was also a big hit. You're on a roll.
Okay, it seems so. So I'm just very grateful, for the opportunity.
And the Motown story. Tell us about this. How did this come to be? How did this play come to be?
Well, Motown has been a part of my life since childhood. My parents were big Motown fans, and so was I. And one day my husband and I was just, you know, tossing about ideas, and it came about to write a story about Motown. And it started with just talking, and then it grew into writing, and it just shaped and became an actual play. And we just gathered our entertainers. We know very talented people, as you can see. And they were all excited and on board. And Motown was created.
Has this been performed anywhere else?
We perform mostly at public schools.
Okay.
And, in fact, we're performing now at Riverbank State Park in Harlem. And it's for children today. But we do adults also, but mostly for school children, school-aged children. We tour throughout New York City, all throughout the New York City area.
You know, we're doing, the show today is featuring members who both, you know, do the good work as city employees and also take the time to, you know, have this other life for themselves. Who the previous guest has written a book. You've written plays. How do you balance the two lives of playwriting and working for the city?
Yeah, so you know, a lot of the playwriting stuff happens at night or on the weekends. And my husband and I work together very well. We work very fluidly. And also have the benefit of my husband, who has a lot of years experience in the entertainment field. So he knows how to make things more concise, where you're not spending a tremendous amount of time on any one particular thing.
Your husband is a retired FDNY firefighter.
Yes, he is.
And he also worked on the Mandela Project with you. Is that correct?
Yes, he has.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did want to make it clear that these are two city employees, or a former city employee and a city employee working together, fulfilling their creative drive.
Yes, and it brings balance into life, really, when you have more in your life than just work.
And
the
Motown, again, that's coming from, as you say, a personal place. You grew up in Motown. So many of us grew up on Motown. But what was the message you wanted to deliver behind that?
I wanted to deliver a message of pride and of triumph. And, because that's what DC-30 stands for and union stands for the person, to represent the person who may have been denied opportunities because of race or ethnicity, but because of their own talent and willpower, they can overcome all of that. And that's really the story behind Motown. It's a feel-good story. It's a story about love and overcoming obstacles regardless of the oppressive forces that are out there. And that's what Motown did. It overcame and helped people of color to overcome.
There's also a lot of sadness in this story of hope. I'm thinking of Michael Jackson, for example, and Michael Jackson's end. And I'm thinking about some of the other folks in the business for whom the business was not kind.
Very true. That's very true. But unfortunately, sadness is a part of life. It's it happens to the best of us, right? So we take the good with the bad, right? But I like to focus on the good and the inspiration that comes from it. And I think that's what people walk away with more than anything.
Do you I'm wondering whether or not the Motown sound, the artists who came out of the Motown experience, is there a 21st century version of Motown?
Wow, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think Motown is in a class of all its own. I just think it stands on its own. It can help propel or has helped propel the success of other artists with other labels. But I don't think there's a type like that can be repeated.
Sort of like certain like the 1977 Yankees. You can't recreate that magic just the way it was.
You really can't. It stands on its own, and it's in a class all by itself. And that's what makes it even more special, you know?
And what was the most important thing to you as you were telling this story? What was it that you wanted to convey, especially within the context of Black History Month?
I wanted to convey how Motown in its own way was a highlight of the protection of civil rights and the rights of the underdog and the rise of the underdog, and how we can look to stories like Motown and Mandela to say, if we press on and stick to our principles and believe in what we're trying to accomplish, that we can rise above all kinds of obstacles. you know. And it's just really to inspire people and to motivate people to move forward in their goals and their dreams and not let race or other forces overwhelm them. Just like Mandela did not let that overwhelm him to the point where he gave up, and not, and just like with Motown, Berry Gordy, he did not let racial issues keep him from pursuing his goals and finding artists, and they all went out there and did their thing.
What is it, any next project that you've got cooking?
Well, my husband and I are thinking about, right now we're in the, you know, conversation phase, which is how all of our projects start, where we just, we're thinking about putting together play with an urban twist, something more modern and up to date that involves urban themes of today.
Such as? I'm wondering what.
You know, just with young people and old people. And what we're trying to do is just diversify our lineup, because there's all kinds of audiences, you know. Some
right.
people gravitate more to Mandela. Some will gravitate more to Motown. Now we're looking for maybe satisfying the taste of a younger audience, or people who are more interested in up-to-date issues.
Do you, so, let me ask, what is uh-huh. what has been your experience? As you say, you have performed Motown in schools.
Yes, and it's been tremendous. They love it. And you'd be surprised. It's surprising how much the children love it. But one thing about good entertainment and good singing, if you're good, you're good, you know, and it touches a person regardless of their age. So when they hear beautiful songs, they may not remember the song because they're little, but perhaps their parents did or their grandparents did.
Well,
very
hard to. Hmm? Are you performing these? Is this predominantly elementary school? I guess what I'm.
Yeah, it's an elementary school.
So
elementary school age children, some high school kids too.
So they're hearing these songs for the first time. So they're.
A lot of them are. Yes, they are.
Okay.
And it goes off well with them. They enjoy it. They laugh. They clap. They leave with a smile. They do.
And that's really what you're trying to do, right?
Mm-hmm. And, that's right.
And also to tell the students a little bit about what their history is. And
right, what their history is. And it's good to educate people of all races. You know, a lot of students aren't all African-American. They're from all backgrounds.
That's about all the time we've got for this week's show. I want to thank my guests, Anita Samuels, the author of Rants and Retorts, and a member of Local 375, and Yolanda Brooks Ruiz, who is a playwright and a Local 768 member. We're going to wrap up the show with a... This is not Smokey Robinson singing Tears of a Clown. This is from The Motown Story by Yolanda Brooks Ruiz. Till next time, ciao.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now if there's a smile on my face, it's only they're trying to fool the public. But when it comes down to fooling you, now honey, that's quite a different subject. Well, don't let my glad expression give you the wrong impression. Really, I'm sad. I'm sadder than sad. You're gone and I'm hurting so bad. Like a clown, I pretend to be glad. Ooh, oh, now there's some sad things known to man, but ain't too much sad in man.
When there's no one around.